listening to a podcast from The National.
After 1 month, 64 matches, 169 goals, 219 yellows and 4 red cards, dazzling individual and team performances, moments of shock and awe, joy and despair, and everything in between, the 2018 World Cup has come to an end. France, the worthy champions, after an appropriately thrilling final against Croatia on Sunday. Before we completely consign the tournament to history, we look back at some of the biggest talking points from Russia, pick the most memorable moments, and discuss the final. This is the Extra Time Podcast. My name is John Turner. Joining me today, Steve Luckings. How you doing, mate?
Oh, I'm miserable, mate. Miserable, it's all over. Can't remember what it was we do when World Cups are not on.
It's strange like that, because it kind of just takes over your entire life, and it feels like how you kind of survived before one, but then they're only every 4 years. It's a really strange existence to live in for a month.
It seems like the wife and kids were there 1 minute and the next they were gone.
But before we go over the tournament as a whole, Steve, because there are many things to talk about, let's talk about Sunday's final first and foremost. It was appropriately fitting, wasn't it? It had goals and drama and a bit of VAR in there as well. It kind of summed up the tournament in one game, didn't it? As a final should do, really.
Yeah, it did. And not enough finals are like that. Yep. I mean, you know, I think you probably have to go back to France, Brazil, 1998 for a decent final, and that was certainly one-sided as well. But it was a cracking game, you know. You know, for me, France deserved to emerge as winners, but that's not to take anything away from Croatia. They really had a go at France. They were really determined to grab their opportunity. They played extremely well. Can certainly feel aggrieved by one or two decisions, certainly around the first two goals that went against them. But it never really felt like they were capable of taking the game away from France, whereas always felt that with the pace of Mbappe, the skill of Griezmann, that France always had that in their locker. They always seemed to be waiting to jump on Croatia. But it was a great game. If we think back to June 14, the first game, Russia 5, Saudi Arabia 0. Loads of goals in that game and loads of goals in the final game. Very fitting end. Great tournament. Really, really enjoyed it.
You say about the way the kind of match unfolded, with Croatia going behind through a contentiously awarded free kick and then deservedly equalising and then going behind again with a contentious VAR decision, when it felt like against a run of play. But once France had that foothold, it always felt like they were going to win it at that point, didn't it?
It always, to me, felt like they were just kind of slowly putting their hands around Croatia's collective neck, and they were always going to squeeze at some point. And like you say, I mean, there's, you know, no debate about it. Griezmann has gone over too easy to win that free kick. You know, he's already in the air before he kicks his leg against Brozovic. You know, it was unlucky defended, but I think we picked up on it on the last podcast about Croatia's defensive lineup for dead ball situations. I mean, it just looked a mess for that. Most teams will play such a high line to not be sat on top of their goalkeeper, where Croatia just go completely the other way. Now, I don't know if this is a common thing or we're only highlighting it because of the goals, the header against Russia as well. But it was just so poor. I mean, they were sat so deep. It was almost two banks of four. There were eight Croatia players in the box. And in that situation where you've got France players running at the goalkeeper as well, it doesn't matter who gets a touch on it. That's going to create havoc in the area. And unfortunately, it comes off Mandzukic's header. No, you know, he's got to try and go for it. Obviously, doesn't get a shout from anyone behind him. And the penalty, I mean, you know, if... You know my personal thoughts on handballs, don't you?
Yeah.
Which is that they should all be penalised. Yeah. Because then you take away intent. But under the rules of the game, where you were only awarding for a deliberate handball, I don't see, even after looking at it again on the replay, how anyone can say that Perisic has intentionally handled that ball. You know, they showed it in slow time, real time. They seemed to speed it up to like times 30 at one point. For the referee asking for it. But I mean, under those circumstances, that's an incredibly, incredibly harsh decision.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, when I first saw it, I thought it was a penalty, and then I did on the replays as well, simply because the arm came out where the ball was crossing into a dangerous area and it prevented the ball from perhaps becoming a goal scoring opportunity or something like that. Even though the box was flooded with Croatia players, and they probably would have hooked it clear. But that was the only reason that I thought the logic the ref might have used to award it, because he wouldn't have awarded it in terms of intent, surely.
Yeah, but my understanding is that that's the only reason that he can award it. Yeah, I might be wrong.
That's a pretty grey area, though, isn't it? Because no one intentionally, well, most people don't intentionally handle in the area.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I take on board what you're saying, that it has stopped the ball travelling into a heavily crowded penalty box where, again, like for the free kick, any touch could take that into the goal. But you're talking about the World Cup final, and it's not just any other game, is it? It's the biggest game of any player's life. And, you know, for a referee to make that call, I think he's got it wrong. But, you know, it's obviously too late in the day now to do anything about it. But that's a hell of a call to play, to make in a once-in-a-lifetime game for not just the players, pretty much everyone involved.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Either way, France were deserved champions over 90 minutes, weren't they?
Yeah, massively.
And a man that's key to that is their head coach, their manager, Didier Deschamps. Rich Jolly did a really good piece for us afterwards, kind of giving, and it's rare for Richard to give full credit to a manager. And the way that he got it absolutely right with Deschamps, saying that, you know, okay, fine, he did have a squad, you know, the envy of most of the sides at the World Cup, but you still have to organise, you still have to motivate, you still have to, you know, put out a game plan and break teams down. And there was a criticism that they perhaps lacked adventure and the attacking flair that their personnel should be capable of, but they produced it when it mattered most.
Yeah, totally. I think there's a couple of key areas you can look at. One during the game, I mean, N'Golo Kanté, who has been phenomenal in this tournament. He's the best screening anchor, holding midfielder, however you want to describe him. But he picked up a booking and he was getting overrun. That's as poor as I've seen Kanté play. Deschamps recognised that, you know, one more missed time challenge and they're down to 10 men. And then that changes the whole complexity of the game. Brings on Steven and Zonzi, again, you know, not of the ilk of a Kanté or a Pogba or a Matuidi. And he was superb. Steven and Zonzi was superb. You know, the decision to stick with Lucas Hernandez, relatively inexperienced at this level compared to Benjamin Mendy, who I know we're both massive fans of.
Yeah.
And also sticking with Olivier Giroud up front. Now, obviously, the stat doing the round and that will haunt him. Well, I'm sure it won't haunt him. He's got a big, shiny World Cup winner's medal, but that he didn't score a goal. I don't think he had a shot on target. But you look back to their France 98 team, a team that Deschamps captained to the World Cup. They have Stephen Guivarch, who again, is a bit of a punchline now for non-scoring strikers, but he has a World Cup winner's medal, and he did a job for the team. And Deschamps clearly recognised, you know, if that had backfired, I'm sure all the criticism of not taking Karim Benzema, Alexander Lacazette, Adrian Rabiot, all these players that he didn't take who would walk into most squads, he deserves tremendous credit for sticking to his principles and sticking by players who were a little bit under fire and a little bit questioned whether they were good enough to perform at this level.
And the way he's utilised Paul Pogba, I think, is a huge thing. I mean, it shouldn't be that difficult getting the best out of one of the best centre midfielders in the world. Clearly, Jose Mourinho hasn't cracked it at Manchester United, or however he's utilised in there is clearly not the best that you can do with Paul Pogba.
Yeah,
But Deschamps has unleashed him and he's got probably the world's best box-to-box midfielder there. Yeah. Surely Mourinho has to look at that and do the same, surely.
Yeah, if we cast our minds back to Euro 2016, you know, Pogba was in and out of the team under Deschamps.
True, yeah.
You know, Deschamps struggled to get a system working around him or to get him fitting into his system. So, you know, I think you've got to credit both manager and player as much as anyone, because I'm a massive fan of Pogba. I think he's just such a magical player. I think that midfield three of Matuidi, who again didn't start the tournament, he played his way into the team. Kanté and Pogba, I think between those three, you've got everything you need in a midfield. And Pogba has been superb. And he, you know, I think everyone's a little bit quick to jump on, oh, Jose can't get the best out of him. And again, you know, I think the player has got to take on a certain level of responsibility for his performances for his club as well. But yeah, I mean, he's got a World Cup winner's medal. He's been superb in this tournament. And so Manchester United fans and Jose Mourinho will be quite rightly thinking, right, this is the £95 million player that we bought. Let's see you turn it on for a 38-game Premier League season in the Champions League. Start, you know, play the way you play for France in this World Cup for us.
Yeah, that's completely fair enough, I think. What about the individual awards that were dished out yesterday after the during the trophy ceremony, Steve? Luka Modric player of the tournament. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I wonder if Eden Hazard might have edged him, but I guess, you know, it's very hard to argue against the player who's playing in the championship game.
Croatia.
Yeah, he didn't look happy having that picture next to Mbappe.
No.
Afterwards, did he? I've never been totally comfortable with that setup. You remember Messi was awarded it at the last tournament, and he looked a face like thunder, didn't he?
Yeah,
you know, he had to collect it. I certainly wouldn't argue with Kylian Mbappe. I think his impact on the tournament has been as memorable as any young player winners of the past. I think of Paul Gascoigne in 1990, probably showing my age a little bit there. But yeah, Modric, you know, he was as instrumental as any Croatian in getting that team to the final. You know, I think back to the last minute challenge in the England game where he, you know, bust a lung just to try and get a ball out for a throw in. Obviously held his nerve after his penalty miss against Denmark to slot home in the penalty shootout. And yeah, he's been their creative fulcrum. He's been their captain. He's led by example. He's just such a wonderful player on the ball, isn't he? Just the pockets of space he can create. You know, I obviously felt very sorry for him for the whole of the Croatia team because they played their part in this tournament and they were fantastic in the final four. Perisic was magnificent. Certainly didn't deserve to be on the losing team. But yeah, I think Belgium have been the best teams in terms of entertainment, and the player that I've enjoyed watching the most in that team has been Eden Hazard. So that would be the only one that I might dispute, but yeah, it's certainly hard.
On Kylian Mbappe, certain World Cups get associated by certain players, don't they? Like any winner or loser, Ronaldo 98. Sure. Do you think Mbappe will be the 2018 tournament and be remembered for lots of things, of course, but it will be associated with Mbappe's coming out party?
Yeah, definitely. I think every World Cup has a, like you say, like that kind of iconic moment or that iconic, you know, lifting of the trophy at the end. And he's been this, you're one of the standouts of this. You know, he's not this great discovery. Like,
no,
we've all known about Mbappe, as you've said
before. He's the second most expensive player in the world. Yeah.
I know you love wrecking out that live whenever Mbappe's name is mentioned. But yeah, I mean, you know, the performance against Argentina will live very long in the memory, where he was absolutely magnificent. And there wasn't a defence that he came up against that wasn't terrified of him. Yeah, and there was a couple of opportunities. Obviously, he scored a fantastic goal in the final. But every time he got the ball, it looked like he was a little bit clumsy getting out of his feet when he was running at the defence. But even when that was the case, he still managed to get a shot off or bring a teammate into play. And you think, yeah, he's 19. He's how good can he become?
I think that must be a lot of it. That's what a lot of it's got to do with, isn't it? How young he is. And I think the football world, I mean, there seems to be this kind of, over the last few years, there seems to be a growing obsession with individual awards and Ballon d'Or winners. They're all pointless awards, really. But
everyone said as much, didn't
well, that's
he?
It. And I think now that everyone's aware that Ronaldo and Messi are starting to get to the latter stages of their career, that people are now searching for the next superstar to adore. And I think a lot of people are looking at Mbappe now as the guy, because he was kind of pinned as one beforehand without really doing overall much, and now he's just lit a World Cup on fire that probably now I think it's kind of going to go into a bit of overdrive, really, isn't it?
I reckon that'll go down really well in the PSG dressing room with Neymar as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until Neymar moves to Real Madrid, of course.
Now that's Eden Hazard.
Oh, well, we'll see about that. The other individual award that went out, of course, was an objective one. That's Harry Kane got the Golden Boot as the top goal scorer. I mean, he scored the most amount of goals.
Yeah, and fair play to him. I mean, what's he meant to do? If he doesn't score the hat-trick against Panama, people are going to pan him because he's not scored goals against Panama. Terrible pun, I know, sorry. but yeah, I mean, you know, they say, oh, there's two penalties and two flicks, two finishes from inside the six-yard box. He's still got to be there to put them away. Would you hold your nerve in a World Cup match? Oh, no, I wouldn't. I'd be blazing high, wide and handsome if I hadn't tripped over and been sick of myself walking up to the penalty. He's still got to be there. I mean, the one that flicks off his boot, of course, I mean, that's fortuitous in the extreme. But Harry Kane would claim that even if it didn't come off his boot. But no, I mean, I think back to the penalty against Colombia. Do you remember how much dissent and the Colombian players and the way they reacted to that, surrounding the referee, trying to scuff up the penalty spot, you know, to hold your nerve for that amount of time? And obviously, I mean, penalties, I don't know how you feel. I mean, they favour goalkeepers for me, because goalkeepers got nothing to lose. You're shooting at him from 12 yards. There's no defenders.
Yeah.
You're not expected to save the ball. Always think it favours a goalkeeper. Held his nerve after, I think it was about 4 minutes. You know, he still got to convert those chances. And if he doesn't convert them, people are going to hammer him. He does, and people are questioning the legitimacy of those goals. He can't win. For me, he had a fantastic tournament. Yes, he looked very tired come the end. I don't think there's any dispute about that. But I thought he captained the team fantastically. I think he's a worthy winner of this award.
That's pretty definitive defence there, Steve. Right, okay, away from Sunday and the final and all the awards, try and cast your mind back over the tournament as a whole. What were the kind of some of the big memorable moments? I mean, it's a month ago. So much has happened in that time. Like, the, for example, Ronaldo's hat-trick against Spain. It feels like a lifetime ago, doesn't it?
Was that this World Cup?
Yeah, exactly. He's a Juventus player now.
My God, yes, he's changed teams in the interim, hasn't he?
And Spain have got a new manager. So much has changed, you know, with Luis Enrique's come in, hasn't he?
It's crazy.
So much has changed since that a month ago. But, I mean, that was obviously a huge, again, another, after Russia's opening win against Saudi Arabia, for Ronaldo to then score, it kind of set the tone for the World Cup, didn't it?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And they were memorable moments. And obviously Ronaldo, you know, like you say, it's almost kind of a memory, a distant memory now, isn't it? But he equalised with the last kick of the ball, free kick. It's fantastic. The Russia result was fantastic. I thought Denis Cheryshev, who, Lord knows how he wasn't starting for Russia, because he was by far their best player. He scored two great goals in that. You remember Alexander Kolarov's free kick against Costa Rica?
Of course, yeah.
That was another banging goal. Obviously, Mexico's win over Germany, just because so many of us, me included, full disclosure, had tipped Germany to win it. And the way Mexico set up, just horribly exposed. I don't think Germany had become a bad team overnight. I thought their win against Sweden was as good as any victory at this World Cup, down to 10 men, but I mean, the way Mexico just kind of picked these holes in weaknesses in a German defence that not many teams have been doing over the past 4 years. I thought that was a fantastic result. Obviously, France's win against Argentina.
Game of the tournament?
Yeah, I think so. I'm still scratching my head as to how Argentina scored three goals, though, because
there was one worldie from Di Maria, wasn't there?
Yes.
And then there was a deflection. And then there was one late on,
the Aguero, like Aguero header. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, that for me was, yeah, definitely the standout match of the tournament. But, you know, as a long-suffering Englishman, obviously seeing England win a penalty shootout for the first time at a World Cup.
From a goal down as well in the shootout, wasn't it? That was, no, I didn't. I thought we were dead and buried. I was halfway out the door at that point.
No, I know, you thrown in the towel, hadn't you? But no, I obviously I think, as I've said, I think Belgium were the great entertainers at this World Cup. Didn't win it, but I thought their comeback win against Japan was magnificent. Last kick of the ball, Nasser Chadli. And then the way they, Roberto Martinez, set up a tactical masterclass to take apart Brazil in the quarterfinals. So many fond memories of this game. Like you say, you kind of mention Ronaldo now as wow, oh yeah, of course, that was this World Cup. But there are so many memories. I can only really think of maybe three games that didn't enjoy. One of them involved France, funny enough, the France-Denmark game. Switzerland-Sweden, was it? Was pretty forgettable. But yeah, other than that, all the games had drama. Plenty of talking points. It was a magnificent tour. It's probably the tournament I've enjoyed the most in the last 20 years.
I found this topic a little bit tedious over the course of the World Cup. Not tedious, but I think it's talked about too much. But what's been your overall thoughts on VAR?
I've loved it. I really loved it. Like, I mean, obviously we talked about the penalty incident. But no, I think it's really added to the drama.
It needs some refining though, doesn't it? Yeah.
The problem is that you're still asking a referee for his interpretation of someone's intent to do something. So I think you're always going to have that kind of grey area. I don't ever think you're going to get 100% because, I mean, take the penalty incident last night. We discussed it and you're in the camp that you don't think or that you thought it was and I don't. And I think if you ask 10 referees, 5 might give it and 5 might not. So I don't think it's ever going to completely clear that up. And I don't think it's great for football if it does, because me and you might not have much to talk about on the podcast, basically. But for me, overall, I think it's been a great addition to this World Cup. Like so many things, I think allowing teams a full substitute in extra time. I think the double jeopardy where you don't necessarily have to send a player off if you're giving a penalty. I think of the Denmark game. Was it against Croatia? Yeah, I believe so. So I think all those additions to this World Cup have really enhanced it. I think it's going to be really strange going to like something like the Premier League next season where VAR is not in use now. But what do you think?
I agree. I thought it's been a good addition. I've just become tired of all of the additional talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, just the pundits and, you know, chatting with friends and colleagues, it's just constant. It just seems to be the kind of centre of so many conversations about the game rather than the game itself. I'm just kind of finding all that a little bit boring.
But I think if you take it out, and perhaps if we forget the one or not, I guess we include the one in the final. If VAR is not used in that situation or other situations in this World Cup, as an example, Neymar trying to win a penalty against Costa Rica where he goes down like timber falling in the woods. The referee gives that decision. He obviously gets a message saying, no, I think you need to look at that. I think there's an obvious mistake. He looks at it, clearly sees that Neymar is fooling no one, or he shouldn't be fooling anyone, and reverses the decision. And I think if VAR is not there for that, then you've still got the talking point of the fact that effectively Neymar has conned a referee to win a penalty.
Yeah, I think it's just the talking point of like the credibility of and the presence of VAR.
I see. You should have stopped me before I went off on that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. And I think, I don't know. And I think it's been a good tournament because there hasn't been a decision. I suppose that's the whole point of having VAR, but there hasn't been a decision that's been really controversial. I mean, was there a handball, a Denmark handball or something that shouldn't have been given, but was?
Yes.
They reviewed it and gave it anyway. I mean, I didn't see that game, but that
was it
that
against
being,
Australia? Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
But funny enough, apart from last night's final, I don't remember a VAR incident in the knockout stages. It seemed to be overly used, or it seemed to be, you know, a couple of incidents in a game or every other game where it was constantly in use. But I can't remember, apart from the final, it being in use in the knockout games.
No.
So we seem to have this kind of cluster of, you know, I don't know whether the VAR officials were told, look, you signal to the referee every chance you get. And wherever they thought that it was kind of overkill, lay off in the knockout rounds.
Well, people just kind of getting used to it a little bit.
Yeah, perhaps, I guess. But it was, but no, I think it's been great. I think it's been a great World Cup. Won't have anything bad said about it.
There's been so many, but could you pick one goal?
Yes, and it comes from one of two right backs. It's either Nacho Fernandez for Spain against Portugal, because and for the same reason Benjamin Pavard against Argentina, purely because the kind of top spin they put on it, Roger Federer would be proud of that. Right foot volley starting, you know, a couple of inches or a foot outside the post and curling in, and I love in off the post goals anyway. Christian Eriksen's goal for Denmark against, was that Australia, the half volley, Ahmed Musa's half volley. As you mentioned, Angel Di Maria. There's been so many goals. Kolarov's free kick. If I was going to pick one, though, I think I'd go for Pavard against Argentina.
Yeah, nice.
How about yourself?
Cavani's first against Portugal.
Yes,
that was my favourite goal. He just kind of pings it across to Suarez, diagonal ball. Suarez traps it, kind of just drops the shoulder to lose his man, and then Cavani makes the run. He tries to find his head. Cavani misjudges it and then kind of heads it in with his face into the top corner. I just thought that goal would, like, it was classic, you know, two centre forwards working together, splitting defences. I just thought it was magnificent.
Yeah, you're right.
And his second goal was magic as well. But I just thought there was something about the way that one was worked, like two precision passes, a precision header when he was kind of off balance. It was a real kind of centre forwards finish.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought that was awesome.
Because he's not in the centre of the goal. He's you know, a good 3 or 4 foot to the outside the post to get there.
He kind of misjudged it a bit as well, and then he kind of readjusts his body, and then, as I said, doesn't quite get his forehead on it. It's kind of his face, or his, you know. It was just fantastic.
But like you say, that's just jolted my memory. But it's only what, 2 weeks ago that happened. There's been so much action and drama in between. But yeah, you're right, absolutely, it was memorable.
You said that you wouldn't have a bad word to say about this World Cup, Lux, but what have been some of the disappointments, even the players? Some teams turned up. Obviously, Germany were a shambles. Argentina never really found any rhythm and got knocked out quite early in the knockout stages. In terms of players or incidences that left a bit of a sour taste?
Well, I mean, we've kind of covered it a little bit already, haven't we? But Neymar's theatrics really... have left quite a bit of taste in the mouth, I think, for a lot of fans. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm a fan of him as a player. I think he's magnificent. I think if you take out that top bracket of Ronaldo and Messi, players like him and Eden Hazard are in the next line. But, I mean, some of the rolling around, and it's not to say he wasn't targeted by teams. I mean, Switzerland, I think there was 10 fouls against him, and probably 9 of them were Veran Barami, who was man-marking him. But the rest of it, there's just no need for it. The game against Mexico where the guy, he puts a foot on his foot, but he looked like he'd been electrocuted the way he rolled around and reacted. So I was kind of disappointed by that. And I was kind of disappointed by Gabriel Jesus as well. I was expecting Brazil to fire at this World Cup and him to kind of be the main man, with Neymar obviously kind of nursing his way back to match fitness. But I think Felipe Coutinho ended up being Brazil's best player.
Absolutely, yeah. I think on Neymar, the big positive that's come out of it all are all the various...
the memes.
All the social media kind of posted memes about it. Someone's created a Neymar diving alphabet. Have you seen that? I've got him in all the different positions from A to Z. It's amazing. I'll try and find it for you.
That's brilliant. But I think, obviously Germany was a massive shock not getting out of the group. And I thought Robert Lewandowski was...
Yeah, stinker.
Poor. And not just him, obviously, the entire Poland team. But when you looked at his goals in qualifying, looked at what he's done at Bayern over the last 3 seasons, or the last 4 or 5 seasons in Germany, and you think, he didn't do it at Euro 2016. He's not done it here now. He really disappointed for such a top class player.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right, let's round up this show with a little bit of speculation. We know how much we love that.
We do.
Plenty of players probably played themselves into some shop windows this tournament, Steve. Particularly 2 Chelsea players and 2 Belgium teammates as well. Thibaut Courtois, the goalkeeper, and of course their captain, Eden Hazard. Neither of them have been that shy in suggesting that it might be time to depart Stamford Bridge, and there seems to be one big club in Madrid that might be quite interested in taking both of them on board. What do you reckon? Is that something that could quite feasibly happen this summer?
Well, like you say, none of their comments post-match from the England game.
Everyone knows my preferred destination, I think, is what Hazard said, which
exactly.
Is never great.
And was it after 6 years at Chelsea, maybe it's time for a new adventure?
Something like that.
Yeah, not the most encouraging words for a new manager coming into a job, are they? So I'm sure Chelsea fans are hoping that Maurizio Sarri's powers of persuasion are legendary, because I mean that is a clear come and get me plea, I think really, isn't it? And obviously with Ronaldo's move to Juventus, there's a big gaping hole in that Madrid forward line that Eden Hazard slots very nicely into. I mean, not in terms of goals return, no players are really going to match that, but in terms of what he can do, the thing that's impressed me about Hazard this tournament is the amount of times he takes the ball with his back to goal, and he can beat a man on the turn, inside and out. Like, he's just phenomenal.
Yeah, he is.
And Courtois, golden glove winner, obviously. I think they obviously have decided, or not, you know, obviously, you know, there's always the possibility they might be trying to eke out a better deal at Chelsea. But I think it would be very, very hard. Obviously, Real Madrid have been long-time admirers of Hazard, and it looked like something might happen last summer, but Hazard broke his ankle, didn't he? Missed a big chunk at the start of the season, which may have scuppered a deal. So, I mean, if they manage to keep one or both of them players, that will be staggering. But it sounds very much like Hazard is off. But in terms of other players, I guess the other big player being tipped for a move abroad before the tournament was Sergei Milinkovic-Savic. I hope I said that right. Lazio put, or rumoured to have put, an 80 million euro price tag on his head. What do you think? Did you see enough of him?
I didn't see enough of him.
No?
I remember his name coming up a bit, and all they would ever
trying
say
trying to remember
was,
it.
That's it. All they would ever say was about, you know, that he's apparently, you know, got something about him, and that he's being linked to big clubs in Europe and all the rest
of
it.
Well, Manchester United have been the club most heavily linked with him.
Yeah, but I don't remember him doing anything noteworthy, though. But again, I can't really comment. I haven't seen enough of him at the World Cup or even before.
I mean, I watched their three group games, and I thought there was enough about him to kind of pique my interest. I mean, I can't say I'd seen him play before that. And it was enough signs about there and encouraging ones to think, yeah, he looks like the kind of player who would thrive at Old Trafford, you know, given the right set of tactics and the right kind of backing from a manager. But, I mean, those are the obvious ones. I'll tell you a guy who really impressed me, actually. He's probably not come up in any conversation. So, Takashi Inoue, I hope I'm saying that right. So
yeah,
little Japanese forward as well. I thought
he was class.
Yeah, plays at Real Betis, obviously not one of the traditionally big clubs in Europe, but I thought he was fantastic. I thought Japan were as well. I thought the way they committed numbers forward, they obviously stick to their game. Obviously, their physicality is not, up there with European sides. So they play a certain way that suits them. And they were really, really enjoyable to watch, I thought. Obviously, there's already been some deals that have happened already. And obviously, I suppose the one that immediately springs to mind is Xherdan Shaqiri going to Liverpool.
Good signing, like that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I like that. We'll talk about a bit more of transfer news in our Premier League podcast in a couple of weeks, I'm sure. But I think that's a really good move. Yeah, I've always he's got a lot of talent. He just seems to be needs to be harnessed a bit better, and he's working now with one of the best managers in the world.
Yeah,
I think he'll be really good. It's just how he's obviously not going to get in as a first choice in that front three.
But
would you play him in the midfield? But then again, but I mean, it's all about a squad, isn't it? It's a squad game. And I think he brings a lot. I think it's a really good signing. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I agree.
Only other players I'd mention, I thought would might be worth a mention, were two England players. I think most of the squad are at pretty big clubs, all due respect. Jordan Pickford, the goalkeeper, and Harry Maguire, the defender.
Two reputations massively enhanced.
Like arguably the two biggest enhanced reputations from this.
I don't know if I told you I really like Harry.
Yeah,
Maguire,
a couple of times, yeah. And the two that aren't at established top six clubs.
Yes, definitely. I think Maguire has proved himself as a threat in both boxes. I think he's one of the most comfortable defenders on the ball at this tournament as well in terms of bringing it out. Much quicker than I had realised. I thought, always had him kind of as a lumbering, aerially dominant centre-back, but he really is one of the more comfortable players on the ball in that squad. And yeah, Pickford was absolutely superb in this tournament. He really was, for a young player, you know, less than 10 caps, wasn't it, going into the tournament. Some of the saves he's made, and his striking of the ball, his ball distribution, everything you need or modern managers are looking for in goalkeepers now. He's got the lot. He's got a very bright future ahead of him.
Courtois leaves Chelsea.
You've got it all figured out.
He could walk straight in there. He's easy replacement.
Yeah.
Anything else? Anything else to mention from the World Cup, Steve? Or we've got everything covered, have we?
I think so, mate. Just, you know,
time for some rest.
Yeah, time for some rest. Time to go with our memories of, like I said, a really, really wonderful tournament.
Well, top stuff. And in a few weeks, we'll be back to discuss the Premier League and all that starts again. We only have to wait a few weeks. It's only three and a half weeks without football. So
August 10th, is it? Yeah, Manchester United versus Leicester. They're all off on their pre-season tours, either now or pretty soon. So yeah, no rest for the wicked.
Wonderful. Excellent, Steve. Thanks for your time this week.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers. Well, that's all we have time for. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts and on the National website at thenational.ae/sport. Thanks for listening.